according to some opinions, there is a specific negative commandment, Lo yiyeh kekorach v'chol adosam. Do not be like Korach and his entourage. And some say that that comes to prohibit making machlokes, right, causing arguments, and being like Korach. If that's the case, then it's extremely important to understand the parameters of what Korach did in order to know how not to be like him. So I want to speak about two specific points here that bothered me, and I think I have an explanation of both of them. First of all, Chazal say that the source, the root of Korach's whole argument against Moshe Rabbeinu started with jealousy. The head of the tribe of Kahar, the family of Kahas, was Korach's cousin, Elitzofan ben Uziel. And he felt that he was next in line for a position. And since he was passed over for that position, this led him to his whole argument. Now, on the surface, it seems like he wasn't jealous, you know, for reasons, or he didn't want money, didn't want necessarily covet, but he wanted to be a functionary for good reasons, for kedusha reasons, or whatever. In fact, what came out of this is that he wanted to be the Kohen Gadol. We have a rule that jealousy is bad when it's for things that are not good things. But kinas sofrim tar bechochma, the jealousy for Torah knowledge, for good midos, for wanting to better yourself spiritually, is a good thing, is a positive thing. So why would Korach's jealousy for something spiritual, right, be something that would lead to all of this bad if spiritual jealousy is not a terrible thing? So you can easily say that Korach didn't want it for high spiritual reasons, he just wanted to be the greater, he wanted the job, right? And it wasn't for spiritual reasons, it was for covet reasons or whatever. But I have another answer, better answer than that. Even if Korach wanted it for the right reasons, still it was the source of his argument, source of his machlokes, because it wasn't proper. First of all, there's a Maharsha. The Maharsha says, Kina Sofrim Tar Bechochma. Very interesting Maharsha. He says that the jealousy of Sofrim, he says Sofrim are not sages. Sofrim are people up on the way up the ladder towards being sages. They're teachers, they're whatever, but they're the lower echelon. They haven't reached yet the peak of wisdom. They're not the sages. On the way up the ladder, sometimes you need incentive to be able to reach higher and higher spiritual levels. And that incentive can be competition, jealousy of someone on a higher level spiritually. But that's not the ideal. The ideal would be able to reach those higher levels without the incentive of jealousy and competition. And it's similar to another idea, which is very similar to it. And that is, it says that mitosha lo lishma bo lishma, that you should occupy yourself with Torah and mitzvahs, even not for the sake of heaven, right? Even for ulterior motive, right? Because eventually it'll lead to lishma. So it's good to do it. And the Rambam says that's why we give children rewards, candy, right? You learn, we'll give you some candy, give you a prize, give you some money, right? We'll give you a certificate, you'll have covet. All of this is shelo lishma. They're learning for all of these side incentives. But better that than not learning. And eventually the child will mature and he'll understand that it's kedai to learn for the sake of learning's sake and not for the sake of the candy or the winning of the competition. Same thing. As a person is not yet fully mature as a sage, he may need that jealousy and competition to spur him on to higher and higher things. And under the circumstances, it's better than nothing. It's better than not having it and not reaching those higher levels. But once you've reached the level of a sage, this is not proper for you to have to use jealousy and competition even to get great higher levels of wisdom or whatever. Mela, Korach was a great person, and he shouldn't have needed the jealousy and competition even for good things to spur him on. And therefore, for him, it was negative, and it led to all these other negative things. Yes?
Isn't that dangerous, though, to use Torah for such a thing? Like, what if you want to know more? Like, you have, like, your jealousy is for, you know, Sofrim, but it's because you want to know more Torah, because you want people to think that you just know a lot. That's using Torah for...
True. That's Shalom Lishma. But... that we say that if a person at least knows that this is not the goal, but he needs this along the way to give him the incentive, but he knows the goal is eventually to do it without ulterior motives, and he wants to reach that, then better to reach the Torah with ulterior motives now, knowing that eventually it'll lead you to better things. If you think that this is what Torah is all about and that's what you want, you just want the ulterior motives. You're never looking to have the lishma. That's no good. That's totally negative. So for Korach, who already reached a level where he shouldn't have needed this, this was a negative. That's one way of understanding. Another idea is that that's not what kinas sofrim means. There's two ways of looking at jealousy for a good purpose. In other words, let's take this situation. There's two people in a classroom. And one is excels, knows more, what's it called, has better midos, and the other student is jealous of the student who's such a masmid and has such good midos and knows so much Torah, okay, and he wants the same. So that's kinas sofrim, but it can have two sources, one that is negative and puzzle, unfit, and one that's fit. Do you want to be like him, or do you want to do what you could do, but you see that since he can do it, you could do it too? Okay? In other words, you're jealous of him, and therefore you want to be equal to him, because otherwise you feel inferior. That's one motivation. The other motivation is, it has nothing to do with him. But since I see that it's such a proper thing to have good midos, and he has them, and such a proper thing to learn so much Torah and to know so much Torah, and he can do it, then I can do it too. He gives me the incentive to want to do it. You know what the difference is? What the litmus test is? What would be if instead of you putting in the extra effort to learn more, to make your midos better, and then to be like him, you could wave a magic wand and make him like you. Take away his midos tovos. Take away his extra learning. Would you be just as happy? If your motivation is, I can't stand that he's better than me, then you can fix that up in two ways. Become like him, or make him like you. If you'd be happy either way, then your jealousy is completely unfit. But if you wouldn't be happy if he became like you, so your jealousy is not because you want to be like him. Your jealousy is because what he is something that's proper to be. I want to be like that too. Then that jealousy is okay. And therefore, Korach's jealousy was not, I want to be a Kohen Gadol, because Aaron is a Kohen Gadol. He said, everybody's equal, so why should Aaron be a Kohen Gadol too? I'd be just as happy if Aaron wasn't the Kohen Gadol, even if I wasn't, but if there's going to be a Kohen Gadol, I want to be one too. That is the unfit kind of jealousy. Where you'd be just as happy if the way that you evened yourself with the other person was by knocking him down, as if building yourself up, then your jealousy is possible. If it has nothing to do with him, you wouldn't be happy if you knocked him down. You want to have what he has because it's the proper thing to have, and it's a good thing to have. It's not that you want money like he has or a car like he has. You want wisdom and midos tovos. That's good things to want. and you want it with the incentive, because if he can do it, why can't I do it? Then that's okay. And you wouldn't be happy if he fell from his level, because that's not what your incentive is. Your incentive is to want to have these things, not to want to be like him. That's not different. Another idea that distinguishes between where the jealousy is proper, and that's called kinas sofrin, and where it's improper. That's the following. Let's say I wouldn't be happy if the other person was knocked down. Okay, so that doesn't make my jealousy improper. I want to be like him, right? But I wouldn't be happy if he comes like me, right? Comes down. I want to be like him. But what do you mean you want to be like him? Everybody has their position, their place in this world. And one person's place is not what another person's place is. Everybody has their role to play in this world. Do you want to take over his role and be like him? Right? Or do you want to apply what you see he can do in his role and apply that to your role? The second way is okay. The first way is also no good. Because if I'm jealous of someone else, even if it's the jealousy is in a positive way, I want to be like him. And for the right reasons, for good things. But I want to duplicate his role, that's possible. If I know I have my role, and I see that he excels in his role with all these positive things, I can use him as an incentive to want to build myself up in my role to the same degree that he built himself up in his role. That's okay. But if I want to be like him and usurp or even copy his role, that's not okay. There's a story which brings out this idea. The minig in Brisk in Europe in the time of the Beis Halevi was that the rich people, after Kol Nidre, after the Maariv, would go home and go to sleep, and the poor people would stay in the shul all night and say Tehillim. One Yom Kippur night, the Brisker Rav sees one of his wealthy members nestling in with the poor people, opening a Tehillim, and obviously intending to stay up all night saying Tehillim with the poor people. So the Brisker Rav sends his shamas to tell him he wants to speak to him. So the guy thinks he's going to get a real slap on the back now, because, wow, he's a rich guy, and he could go home and go to sleep, and he's staying with the poor people to say Tehillim. Comes up to the Brisker Rav, he looks him in the eye, and the Brisker Rav says to him, if you don't go to home and go to sleep now, immediately, you are liable to a death penalty. Just what the guy had to hear, called me a Dre night. So he said, but why? All I'm doing is saying Tehillim with the poor people. He said, I'll tell you why. He said, in the Beis HaMikdash, there were two roles, two functions that the Levium served. Some were gatekeepers, and some were in the choir. And the Gemara says that if somebody who was in the choir left his position and went to tend the gates, he's liable to a death penalty. She said, why is that? I mean, the Maisa, he's just for serving the other function that the Levium served. He didn't, you know, like, go AWOL, right? He didn't, give up his responsibility. He just changed jobs. Why should he be liable to a death penalty? Said the Brisker Rav, in time of war, if you have a person whose job is to be the pilot of a plane, but he also knows how to be the captain of a boat, and he gets tired of flying missions, and without permission, he changes his job, and he goes and commands a boat in the Navy, he's going to be liable to a death penalty just as much as if he deserted his job and ran away from the war. Why? Because his responsibility is to be a pilot. And if he leaves that responsibility, he's endangering the whole war effort. He's going and he's now piling the boat, but he, Lamaisa, deserted his responsibility. Even though he accepted a different responsibility, that wasn't yours. So said the Brisker Rav to this man. So there's a reason why the rich people go home to sleep Kol Nidre night, and why the poor people stay here and say Tehillim. Tomorrow, on Yom Kippur, we have an appeal for all of the charitable organizations in Brisk on Yom Kippur. And the rich people have what to give. So we want them to go home get a good night's sleep, get up tomorrow in a good mood, so they give in a, with a generous hand, in a good mood. The poor people don't have anything to give tomorrow. So they give their tehillim all night that the appeal should be successful the next day. So each one is fulfilling their role. If you want to desert your role and nuzzle in with the poor people and take over their role, you're liable to a death penalty. You go home, get a good night's sleep, do your job the way it's supposed to be done. Don't try to usurp the job of the poor people. They have their role, you have your role. Different people. So, same thing over here. A person could be jealous of someone else, and that was Korach. Korach wanted to be a Kohen Gadol, but that wasn't him. He was a Levi. He wasn't a Kohen. So, wanting to be a Kohen Gadol is wanting to usurp somebody else's role, somebody else's tchum, somebody else's boundaries. You have to stay within your boundaries. Be as best as you can within your boundaries. Don't try to usurp somebody else's role. That was the problem. And that explains that Moshe Rabbeinu, he said to the Levium, it's not enough that you are, what's it called, that you are Levium, that God separated you to be Levium, and you also want to be Kohanim? Rav lochem b'nei Levi, enough. So God said the same way you told the Levium, Rav lochem b'nei Levi, later on I'm going to say this, use the same terminology for you. When you ask to go into Eretz Yisrael, and I'm going to deny your request, I'm going to use the same words. Ravla, enough. Enough for you. So Moshe was punished. What did he do wrong? He told the Levium as it was. You're supposed to Levium. You're not supposed to be Kohanim. So why was Moshe punished that God used the same terminology when he refused his request to go into Eretz Yisrael? I think it's not a punishment, just the opposite. It's a reward to Moshe Rabbeinu. Because there's a way of misunderstanding what Moshe said to the Levium. Don't want more. It's enough for you to be a Levi. Why do you want to be a Kohen? There's nothing wrong with wanting to be a Kohen. Wanting to be more. But wanting to be more means within your realm, not to be in somebody else's realm. The problem over there wasn't that they wanted more. The problem was that they wanted that more in a different role. And that wasn't for them. And therefore, God said, I don't want anybody to make a mistake from what you said, that they should think that people should not want more. They shouldn't be jealous of other people's attainments to want to attain within their realm as much as that person attained with his realm. That's perfectly okay. Nothing wrong with that. What you meant is, don't try to usurp somebody else's role. Don't try to go into a realm that's not yours. That was what the problem was. That's exactly what the Rebbe Nachum said. To make that clear, later on when you ask to go into Eretz Yisrael, I'm going to say Rav Loch, the same terminology, and then it'll be clear that it's not the idea you shouldn't want more, but this is not your realm. Your realm is to remain in Chutz La'aretz. Your realm is not Eretz Yisrael. So God made it clear by using the same terminology to Moshe Rabbeinu that when he used that terminology before, he didn't mean don't want more when it comes to spirituality. But want that more within your realm, not into somebody else's realm. It's exactly what God meant when he told Moshe Rabbeinu, your realm is not Eretz Yisrael, your realm is to stay in the desert. Your place, your role doesn't include Eretz Yisrael at this time in history. And that's why it's called Kinas Sofrim. Why were the rabbis called Sofrim? The Gemara says. Why were the great sages called Sofrim? Unlike the Marsha that says Sofrim means, has a meaning of teachers or whatever. But the great sages were also called Sofrim. Why? Because they counted every letter in the Torah. Meaning they saw the Torah is important. And therefore it's kedai every letter to count, to know how many there are. Every aspect of Torah is important. Every letter, every crown on the letter is important. So Kina Sofrim means, it's a kina that comes not because I want to be like somebody else, but because I see from him how important it is to reach those attainments. And then, like we said before, the difference will be two differences now. One difference will be, will you be just as happy if he loses his attainment? If your reason is to be like him, not because what you see by him is important, then you'll be just as happy if he loses his attainment. And that's not kina sofrim. That's not kina because you recognize how important it is. It's kina because you don't want the other person to be better than you. and therefore either you can be as good as him or he can be as bad as you. And the second thing is, I don't want to be like him, but I see from him how important, how he's developed his role. I would like to develop the same potential in my role as he did, because I see how important it is. It's not that I want to be like him and usurp his role and enter into a realm that's not mine, but I see from him how important what he has is. I would like to have that same thing within my realm too. Yes.
So one of the things with that is that if a person is jealous to the extent that he doesn't, you know, like if the other person loses his role or drops down from his role, then to the person that's jealous, it seems like it seems easier to attain that level because he just drops down. So now he's closer.
Yeah, okay, to again, person. If that really is what's working within him, fine. But if that's not what's working within him, right, it's not because, well, now I see it's easier attainable, whatever, but it's because I really was jealous of the other guy, and now he's closer to me, so nothing to be jealous about anymore, right, then it's possible. So you're right. It could be that that's not what's motivating him. But really, it depends what the motivation is. So what I said still applies. It's just that sometimes that may not be the motivation.
Is that also like a bad
That's goal? Let's put it this way. That's closer to the good than the ideal. Then it's not the ideal. Okay, one more thing. Second thing that bothered me about this was, in the beginning, Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, argues with Korach and makes tests, and we'll see who God wants or whatever. And he's very amenable to Korach. Okay, he doesn't come and hit him head on. And many other times when Jews sinned, Moshe Rabbeinu went and davened for them and pleaded with God not to destroy them or whatever. And here, all of a sudden, something happens, and Moshe Rabbeinu becomes a what's it called? Very, very bold. And he invokes God to swallow these people up alive. Doesn't pray for them that they should be saved and God should do a miracle and show them the error of their ways. But Moshe is not praying for them. He's praying that they should be destroyed. And he is like, you know, there's no more peacemaking over here. This is it. What happened? Right? And then some of them, Farshim, asked this question. Every other time, you know, the people serve the golden calf, Moshe's there to pray for them. The people are in the, what's it called, send spies, Moshe's there to pray for them. Somebody insults Moshe Rabbeinu, tries to usurp his greatness, says, how come you're the big shot over here? All of a sudden, no more prayers, no more what's it called mercy, swallowed them up. Why? And what changed? I'm adding that in the beginning, Moshe was very what's it called pliable, flexible, trying to work things out, let's talk it out, right? He went to Dothan and Aviram, he went to them to try to make peace. And then something happened and everything changed and Moshe became what's it called? Not flexible, inflexible, and out to destroy. Why? So I think has the following. In the beginning, Korach came with a very personal thing against Moshe Rabbeinu. Why are you the big shot? Why aren't other people given the same levels that you and your brother took for yourself? And it was a personal thing, and it was between them, and the rest of the Jewish people weren't involved. When it remained private and personal, Moshe Rabbeinu was willing to do anything. The Rebbeinu Shalom wants somebody else, gives him three. Moshe Rabbeinu said before, by the when Yeshua came and said, hey, there's two guys who are prophesying in the Machaneh, right? We need more prophets, right? It takes away from Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy. If there's other prophets, Moshe says, Halavai, everybody should be prophets. What are you, what's it called, jealous of my standing? I would be happy if everybody was prophets. So Moshe Rabbeinu said the same thing over here. If God wants, everybody could be a Kohen Gadol. If that's what God wants, let's see what he wants. Very, very flexible, very amenable. It's a private thing. It's between him and Korach, personal. What changed was Korach went and he involved the entire congregation after this. Everybody now took sides. Korach, Moshe. It became a whole public thing. And besides that, Korach challenged Moshe Rabbeinu's authority. And that was God's authority. Because God had chosen Moshe Rabbeinu by Matan Torah to be the one to give over the Torah. And now Korach was saying that what Moshe did, he did it on his own, and he totally broke down Moshe's authority in speaking in the name of God. And that already put in jeopardy the entire Torah, the entire authority of the Rabbanu Shalom. That's why the rabbis say that somebody who argues on their Rav is if they argue on God. Because the Rav is the representative of God's authority, the Torah's authority, to his congregation, to his community. And if you're to his yeshiva, to his Talmidim. And if you challenge the authority of the Rav, you're challenging God's authority. Because God's authority comes through Torah sages. And if you challenge the authority of the Torah sage, in whatever setting it may be, you're basically challenging God. And once it became a public thing, and a challenge to God's authority, Moshe said, I have no right now to be flexible. Because now there's a Chilul Hashem. Now there's the people are going to be affected. The whole Torah is going to be affected. It's not me anymore. When it's me, I can be nice and forgiving and flexible and whatever. When it's not me, when it's the authority of the Torah, and it's something that affects the entire people, not just me and my brother and people are coming and it's a private thing, then there's no place to be flexible anymore. And that's why Moshe said to them, "He bodlu mitocha edaro, get away from these people, because now there's a danger that the rest of the Jewish people are going to be affected by their chutzpah." And that's exactly what Moshe saw. He saw that when he went to Dothan Vavira, they were azepanim, they were brazen faced. They came with chutzpah. Once a person has chutzpah, then there's no hope anymore. There's nothing that's going to change their mind. And therefore you have to fight them to the death, because otherwise they're going to affect everybody else, and the whole authority of God and the Torah is going to be undermined. And therefore, the punishment they got was to be swallowed up by the earth. It accomplished two things. We said now the reason Moshe Rabbeinu was inflexible is because this was something that was affecting everybody and could affect them in a way that would undermine the entire authority of the Torah. So, therefore, two things had to be done. One is that these people be separated from everybody. Totally. Right? In other words, their memory would be erased from the Kohol. How would that happen if they're swallowed up alive? Nobody's coming to visit them when they're sick. Nobody's coming to comfort their mourners when they die. But they're swallowed up as if they never existed. Alive. In one second they're there, next second they're not. That's one thing, that they're being swallowed up by the earth. It took away the first threat of them affecting other people. The second threat was what the effect was. The effect was that they're usurping or they're undermining God's authority through Moshe Rabbeinu. Therefore, the way they were killed showed that what they were doing was wrong. How so? God gave man a standing in this world. He separated the seas and made dry land. And the earth gives man a standing. God gave man the earth. That's where his standing is. But his authority over the earth is only because he accepts God's authority and functions with the earth the proper way. That's why it says that God gave the earth to man after he makes a bracha. Bracha means I accept the fact that God is the master. He's the one who everything emanates from, and therefore my authority over the earth is dependent on my accepting God's authority over me. But if you don't accept God's authority over you, you undermine the authority of your Rav, and in that way undermine God's authority over the world, then just like you are basically swallowing up your authority, the earth will swallow up you, who are supposed to be the authority over it. So the earth will open its mouth and swallow you, because you're basically opening your mouth and swallowing the one who you're supposed to have who's supposed to have authority over you. So what's happening to Korach is exactly what he's doing to Moshe. He, with his mouth, swallowed up Moshe and undermined his authority, which is God's authority, so fine. So the earth, which is supposed to bow to your authority, you're supposed to now rule over the earth, is going to open its mouth and swallow you up. And you're going to end up alive in Gehenna. Because that kind of chutzpah, to try to undermine God's authority, which is the unbelievable Az's Panim. What does it say? Az Panim, L'Gehenna. An Az Panim creates total, non-existence. It's a better word, but we'll use that for now. And that's Gehenna. Gehenna is the absence of existence. You end up alive in Gehenna. You're not dead, you're not alive. Why? Because death, the earth at least atones for a person who dies, he's buried, right? And the earth atones for him. So he's utilizing the earth in death to benefit him. But here, just like you don't accept the authority above you, so you have no authority over the earth. The earth can't help you anymore. So it doesn't give you a standing, you go right to Gehenna. And you don't get the chance to decay in the earth and go back to your elements, which causes a kapara, because you don't deserve the authority of the earth because you don't accept God's authority over you. So therefore, the earth is not going to help you. You're going to go right into Gehenna alive, and you're not going to even have the benefit of dying and being buried in the earth, where that's going to be a kapara, to be an atonement for you. And another idea is, so somebody who doesn't recognize his place, going back to what we said before, that the jealousy of Korach, part of the problem was he didn't recognize his role, his place. And part of that is knowing your place vis-a-vis the people greater than you. You have to bow to the authority of your Rav. Your Rav bows to the authority of God. If you don't know your place and you want to usurp somebody else's place, then you have no place in this world. And therefore, the earth opens up its mouth and you end up in Gehenna. It's a place of no place. You don't have a place in this world. You have a place in a place that's non-existent, that represents non-existence. And that's why the punishment for such argument against authority affects even little children. Because it's not a punishment. It's a natural result of this kind of undermining of authority, is that you create Gehenna. So everybody who is connected, even children, find themselves in that Gehenna. It's not a punishment. Punishments aren't given to minors. But you create a reality that affects everybody who's involved, even children. Because that reality is not a punishment. It's the reality of undermining the authority of your Rav and the authority of Hashem. The reality is that you create Gehenna. That's where you are. And everybody who's attached to you goes with you. If it would be a punishment, it wouldn't affect little children. But it's not a punishment. It's a natural result of the sin itself. So that, to a certain degree, is a little bit of a perspective on two aspects, and they have a connection with each other, of Korach's sin, the roots of it, and the final manifestation of it. And that'll help us to be able to fulfill the command of not being like Korach, not to have that kind of jealousy, which is the root of what came out, and to know that what comes out, how terrible it is, that even a Moshe Rabbeinu, who's very merciful and normally is very pliable and very flexible and very nice and accommodating, Moshe Rabbeinu, there's nothing to accommodate in such a situation.